This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Here's what's trending on the Team 980.
All right, what's trending is that the Wizards game with the Bucks tomorrow night canceled. All right, the Wizards just don't have enough healthy players to play. They didn't know this last night when they were doing a conference call, and Bradley Beal said the Wizards were, quote, fighting the league, closed quote, on playing the game with only eight players, and the league agreed. It's the 17th NBA game postponed, the sixth for the Wizards. The game tomorrow night with the Bucks is off. Meantime, Alex Ovechkin, Evgeny Kuznetsov, Dmitry Orlov, and Ilya Samsonov are added to the daily list of players who are unavailable to play or practice in accordance with the league's COVID protocols. All right, it doesn't mean they all tested positive for COVID-19, but they are on the list, and they're required to quarantine as a high-risk close contact. Add to that, the league fined the Capitals $100,000 for a violation of health and safety protocols. The NHL fined the Caps for, quote, social interactions among team members who were in close contact and who were not wearing face coverings. The Washington football teams closed its facility in Ashburn due to multiple positive coronaviruses. That's something the team announced yesterday. By the way, to the NBA, where last night Kyrie Irving was back in uniform for the Brooklyn Nets. They lost to the Cavaliers in double overtime, 147-135. Kyrie Irving did have 37 points in his return. Kevin Durant had 38, and James Harden had 21 in their first game, all three playing together for the Nets. That's what's trending here. Jeremy Fowler from ESPN will join us in about 15 minutes. He just wrote a really complete story with a lot of condition on anonymity quotes from execs around the league on the Deshaun Watson situation. And again, and I mentioned this earlier in the show, Washington is one of five teams that a lot of the experts believe would be in the hunt for Deshaun Watson if he were actually traded. My personal opinion is that he would not be traded. So the news yesterday that came from Ian Rappaport was confirmed by various people. We had Chris Russell on the show last hour about Martin Mayhew being added to the mix. Nothing's been finalized. Nothing's been announced at this point. But we believe that Marty Herney and Martin Mayhew, who was part of the Washington 1991 team, all right, the Super Bowl winning team, we played the highlight of his pick six against the Cowboys that year. In the first game, by the way, that they lost that particular season. Martin Mayhew was a longtime general manager in Detroit. Martin Mayhew drafted Matt Stafford when he was the GM in Detroit from 2008 to 2015. Neither Herney or Martin Mayhew have a sterling resume in terms of wins, losses, you know, playoffs, winning seasons versus losing seasons, deep playoff runs, although Herney was the acting general manager in 2003 when the Panthers went to the Super Bowl. I'm a little bit surprised at the reaction from many of you over the last couple of days that Washington can do better. I would say roughly in the responses I've had on Twitter, I would say that three quarters of you are not really thrilled about Marty Herney. I would bet many of you looking at Martin Mayhew's draft record as well wouldn't be thrilled about Martin Mayhew. My position hasn't changed much, but I wanted to add a little bit to it from the other day when we were talking about Herney. And we can talk about Herney and Mayhew as a combo here, but this is mostly about Herney. I just can't, as a fan, and a fan that's more optimistic today than he was 2 months ago or 4 months ago or certainly a year ago, I just can't, you know, summon the energy to dislike this move. I do understand why many of you have a problem with it. You know, Marty Herney's record, 107 and 121, that's 14 games under 500 in 15 years as the active GM in Carolina. His teams, the years that he was the acting GM in Carolina, finished above 500 just four times. His teams went to the playoffs just four times in 15 years. One of those four, as I mentioned, was the 2003 season where they went to the Super Bowl and lost to the Patriots on an Adam Vinatieri field goal, 32-29. They made it to the NFC Championship game when Marty Herney was the general manager after the 2005 season. So they made it to a Super Bowl, and they made it to the NFC title game where they lost to Seattle. By the way, that was the year in which Washington last won a playoff game. They beat Tampa Bay, and then they lost to Seattle. That was the Carlos Rogers had a pick six in his hands for a 10-0 lead. LaVar had knocked out Sean Alexander, and Washington actually had a legitimate chance of making the NFC title game. I would say during the Dan Snyder era, you know, that's the, I mean, the 99 season, they were really close to beating Tampa Bay and advancing to the NFC Championship game against St. Louis in Snyder's first year. But Snyder hadn't had enough time to mess it up. So I almost don't give him credit for that, even though he was technically the owner. He had taken it over in the summer of 99. Didn't have a chance to do what he wanted to do, was get rid of Brad Johnson, you know, and bring in Jeff George, which wouldn't have led to anything. But that 2005 season was about as close as they've been to the NFC title game since 1991, during the Snyder era anyway. But that was the year that the Panthers faced Seattle in the NFC title game and lost. Herney was the GM for that. To be fair to Marty Herney, the record isn't great, but the players that he drafted and brought in and the coach that he hired, Ron Rivera, which, by the way, he fell on his sword for in 2012 after they started 1-5. We heard that from David Newton, the guy that covers the Panthers for ESPN.com. He mentioned that Jerry Richardson wanted to fire Rivera. That was his second year. They started 1-5 in 2012. And Herney went to bat for Rivera saying, no, you've got the right guy. If you need to fire somebody, fire me. And he did. But after he was fired during that 2012 season, with his players primarily and the coach that he hired, Carolina went on to win three straight division titles, and they made another Super Bowl trip following the 15-1 season in 2015 when they lost to Denver. By the way, he's given a lot of credit for those three teams that went on that run. Gettleman was the GM, but a lot of people do recognize that Herney brought in really the foundation of those teams that won three straight division titles and eventually went 15-1 and got to a Super Bowl. So I get it. Why nobody's like really thrilled. And I think part of it is just the fact that you are concerned that they're going to let the next Sean McVay, Matt LaFleur, Kyle Shanahan leave the building and Kyle Smith, you know, all of those people. And we've had them during the, you know, many years here have gone on to greater heights somewhere else. But I'm going to stick with not being alarmed about this hire or a Martin Mayhew hire. First of all, I have heard great things about Martin Mayhew, the person, over the years. So many good things from so many different people. And one of the things that Ron Rivera is looking for, he's looking for quality people as he's changing the culture. He's looking for people like Martin Mayhew, who has been a grinder and has not cared from an ego standpoint about things like titles. You know, he went from GM in Detroit for 9 years, 2008 to 2015, where again he did draft Matt Stafford, to a director position for the Giants, and then a personnel executive position in San Francisco, to where over the last 2 years he became the vice president of player personnel in San Francisco. He has not regained a GM title, but he's continued to go after it, and I bet you Ron Rivera loves that about him. But I guess the point that I want to make is this. To me, it's just a good sign that Rivera's making this hire and not an imbecile. You know, we have had imbeciles making these decisions for too long. You know, the owner, Vinny Serrato, etc. Bruce Allen. You know, this is the first non-moron to make a GM-type hire or two since Marty Schottenheimer hired John Schneider as his top personnel man in 2001. I like that. Two, Rivera's earned my trust with hiring people he's comfortable with after a year. I think Rivera's a good judge of character. Hey, Ron, please do yourself a favor and do us a favor. Don't allow Dan to be influential in any of these hires. Okay, he does not have a good sense for quality people. People that can change the culture of his organization. I know he got you, which is great, but I think we can all thank Coach Joe for that. But Ron Rivera, you know, even this Carolina to Washington, you know, caravan, it's worked out so far. So far, so good. Rob Rogers, Ryan Vermillion, Scott Turner, John Matsko, Pete Hayner, Sam Mills. You know, he's brought in somewhere in the neighborhood of a dozen to, you know, 14 people with him. The football operation and product is much better than it was a year ago, 2 years ago, 3 years ago. It's in a position where it has not been in a long time. There are capable adults making football decisions. Now, some of you have said to me, is it an elite group? I mean, are they going to be able to, you know, contend for a Super Bowl? Is it a group that's going to create the first run of success during the Dan Snyder era? You know, Snyder himself is going to have a big say in that. You know, if he stays away and lets the football people make the football decisions, there's a chance. We've always felt that way. So that's a big if. I understand that. But let's say he does. Let's be optimistic and say that he does. I'm not trying to be naive. I'm not trying to ignore the past. But let's say that Rivera and Herney and Mayhew and Rogers, you know, are able to make all of the decisions. Are they good enough to win and win big? I don't know. I mean, I can tell you this. The Panthers under Herney and Rivera and the Lions under Mayhew, neither one of those two organizations was considered to be super smart, super innovative. You know, insert any adjective you want to sort of build it up. They weren't considered elite franchises in the way they were run. But on the other hand, nobody ever talked about those franchises the way they talk about our franchise. You know, even the years that Mayhew was in Detroit, they were improved when they drafted Stafford. They made the playoffs twice. They won 11 games 1 year. You know, the Panthers were always somewhere in between. You know, they were not a terrible franchise, not an elite franchise, but I do think that people always saw Rivera and respected him and thought he was one of the coaches that knew what he was doing. And I think we saw some of that in his first year. I'm not showering with praise, you know, for 7-9. I'm just saying that the team I watched this year was the best coach team we've had here in many years. And I like the direction he's taking the team. So the hiring of Herney, the hiring of Mayhew, the structuring of the front office, as long as Ron is the final say, I'm going to trust in that right now. I sort of believe in his judgment. By the way, you know, I was reading this story from Albert Breer, which he wrote on Christmas Eve. It was the, you know, the typical end of the football season story about who are the top GM candidates in this offseason. And I thought it was interesting that, you know, a lot of guys like Nick Caserio and Scott Fitterer, who, by the way, has already been hired. Terry Fontenot has already been hired. Brad Holmes just got hired. And then, you know, the George Patton got hired. He had a lot of big names or names that he thought would get jobs. Marty Herney's name wasn't on any list. Martin Mayhew's name wasn't on the big list. There was a secondary list, like five second chance candidates. John Dorsey, Brian Gain, Ryan Grigson, Martin Mayhew, Rick Smith. Marty Herney's name wasn't listed. There were also 12 what he called rising names to watch. And you know whose name wasn't on that list? Kyle Smith's name wasn't on that list. There were a bunch of guys who were on that list. Is right, like finding the next young guy who's going to be a really good GM. Kyle Smith's name wasn't on that list. Look, it's one person's opinion, but he, you know, he obviously takes the temperature of many around the league about who's going to be serious candidates and who is not, and who people think down the road will be good general managers. And I thought it was just interesting that Herney's name wasn't on there and Kyle Smith's name wasn't on there. Mayhew's was. Anyway, the net of it is I'm not worked up over either one of these hires in a negative way. I'm actually just in that mode of, finally, there's a guy back in the organization. Ron Rivera is his name. I felt this way when Mike Shanahan was in the organization. I certainly felt this way when Coach Joe came back and when Marty was around. There's a guy here that if he's allowed to make the decisions, be the final say, and the owner stays the hell out of the way, I feel like it's going to be much better than it's been. And I think we've seen signs of that. So I'm going to trust in Ron on all of this. Jeremy Fowler from ESPN, he wrote a very in-depth story about Deshaun Watson and whether or not he would be available, and if he is available, what it would cost to get him, and where Washington fits in a potential suitor. That's next. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, Team 980. I've been talking about this Jeremy Fowler story on Deshaun Watson since my podcast yesterday. Jeremy joins us right now on the show, and you can follow Jeremy at J Fowler ESPN. He does a great job covering the NFL. You know, I really, first of all, I enjoyed this story, and I love the beginning, your stages of sort of a big-time trade, including stage three, which is an Adam Schefter tweet reminds us that, yes, this is real. So I want to start with basically the end game on this, in your opinion, and my conclusion sort of to reading this entire story. Do you think this will actually happen? It would be unprecedented, right? Do you think it'll happen? Deshaun Watson gets traded.
Boy, I still say no. And what's tough is it is really real in that Deshaun Watson's unhappiness is bubbling and it's growing, and they might be beyond repair at this point. That's the issue. So if it is that, then I think the Texans will be forced to do something. But talking to people around the league, they're still like, look, you have a top five quarterback in his mid-20s that you just re-signed to a long-term extension 5 months ago. Like, it's not the logistical sound general manager move to trade him. Like, you just don't do that. And so I don't know that Nick Caserio, the GM, wants that to be his first move. So I think the head coaching hire will be big here. If they hire, say, Eric Bieniemy, who Deshaun Watson is known to be high on, maybe that can smooth some things out. But there are also people, close to Watson that think that the bridge is burned. So it's a complicated answer. Right now, I'm still going to say no.
Yeah, that's my gut, too. It just doesn't happen. I mean, it's a top five debatable elite quarterback, which are impossible to find, and he's 25 years old, and you just signed him to the second biggest deal in the history of the game behind the Mahomes deal. You had a quote in there from an NFC exec that said, something doesn't add up, and it doesn't. But I wanted to have you take us through it chronologically. How did they get here? Why did they get here where he is so upset?
Well, I think if you go chronologically, it dates back probably a few years with the McNair ownership. You know, there have been some undertones of some racial issues that have been reported in our ESPN, the magazine, and a great story, Seth Wickersham and Don Van Natta a couple years ago about, Mr. McNair, who had recently passed away, but said, you know, that he didn't want the inmates to run the asylum when it comes to players running an organization. And that comment has resonated that locker room for a while now. There are some issues there, and there's some friction. So I think, for one, Watson is speaking for the entire team a little bit. I think that's become clear. And then you go through some of the dysfunction with Jack Easterby, the executive who's kind of fighting for his job and sort of trying to wield power. That's become testy because some think it's disingenuous. And then recently, you know, Deshaun was saying, hey, well, let's get a good foundation here. If I'm going to be here and there's some problems, let's get this right. And then so when the owner says, hey, I'll include you in the process of hiring a GM and a head coach, and then doesn't, I think that was the last straw for Deshaun.
if it goes back a few years, Jeremy, why did he sign the long-term deal?
Well, because I think, well, one, you take the money, right? It's a huge contract, and nobody's going to turn that down. They gave him $39 million a year. So, but, you know, when he signed that, I don't think he had intentions of leaving. And here's the thing. There are some things here we probably don't know. Some things, I'm sure Deshaun Watson has receipts from what has happened maybe in the last 4 or 5 months where things have gotten ugly. They only won 4 games and Bill O'Brien was fired. There could be some new information that comes out here, certainly. But I think he feels lied to because the owner told him, hey, I'm going to involve you. And then when he doesn't, it's like, well, that sort of accentuates the previous problems that were bubbling under the surface and magnifies them.
We're talking to Jeremy Fowler from ESPN. I urge everybody to read this story. It's lengthy, but it's really interesting. And you mentioned Jack Easterby's name. He's an executive in the organization. As you wrote, he's a former chaplain and character coach. He's fighting for his job, but he had an influencing decision-making at the top of the organization. And you wrote that there was a disingenuous mix of faith in football that rankled a faction of the locker room. But you also mentioned that Easterby's close with Caserio. Do you think this is a big thing about getting Easterby out of the organization, that that would help?
Well, potentially, and there's been no evidence that the Texans are going to do that. The owner seems very loyal to Easterby, and that's complicated in and of itself because, you know, I talked to people who were with Easterby in New England when he was sort of a conduit between Bill Belichick and the locker room, and they love the guy. They say he's great. He's great with players. He listens. He motivates, all those things, right, that sound great on paper. But you go to Houston where you can maybe see some power, and maybe he's taking advantage of that. You know, Sports Illustrated has great reporting on this, on the problems with Easterby and how the locker room feels some of that disingenuous issue there. But also, our Chris Mortensen reported that firing Jack Easterby won't solve this, that it's a Cal McNair issue. It's an ownership issue. So if it is that, that's where I don't know if Deshaun is willing to play for the team again. But the problem is he hasn't made that clear. Everything's been in these sort of subtle tweets and missives. We don't really know how he feels yet. That's where it all gets complicated.
So there are a couple of things that I wanted to get to before we get to Washington's potential, you know, placement in suitors if this actually were to happen. You wrote a pretty lengthy segment in this story about how the NFL views Watson as a quarterback. And I think the default on this, Jeremy, is this guy's elite. Like, this is one of the guys that it's so hard to find. And, you know, most of the NFL has been searching for somebody like this for, you know, multiple decades and has never found it. So if he becomes available, that's why the price would be so high. But what does the rest of the league think? Where does Watson rank, you know, among the perceived quarterbacks? Is he truly a top five elite guy?
Well, he's a debatable top five guy. He's a fringe top five guy. He is not Mahomes, Aaron Rodgers, Russell Wilson. He's not that. Those guys, you plug them in a lineup, and you're getting a winning season 9 times out of 10, probably 10 times out of 10. So, yeah, I've done a lot of homework on the quarterback position. I did a big project this summer, talked to more than 50 execs and coaches about how they feel about quarterbacks. And Watson came in at number 4, which is a great ranking. He beat out Drew Brees. But since then, you've had Josh Allen probably replace him, which would push Deshaun to 5. And it depends on how you feel about how Tom Brady's playing, too. It might move him to 6, you know. He takes a lot of sacks. You know, he throws interceptions at times when they have a lead. Like, his rate of throwing interceptions with the lead is fairly high. So, but that said, you talk to people around the league that say, look, this, if you're looking for elite quarterbacks, he's on the list, no question. And the good news with Deshaun is that he has a lot of room to still improve. He's considered an unfinished product, which I guess all quarterbacks are, but a lot of teams are thinking, hey, if you can improve his pocket presence a little bit, he will really take off maybe in a Patrick Mahomes-type trajectory. Maybe not that high, but, you know, he's got that kind of gear that he can take it to.
Yeah, let's not forget, they had a 24-0 lead at Arrowhead last year in the postseason before Mahomes erupted. We're talking to Jeremy Fowler from ESPN. I want to get to the potential destinations, which includes Washington, in a moment. But just speak to what your research indicates the compensation package required to get him if he were actually available.
Yeah, it's going to take at least 3 first-round picks, maybe more. Could take a veteran player involved too, or like a, you know, an ascending player on a rookie contract. You think of the Jets, if they're involved because they have the number 2 pick plus more. You know, maybe they asked for Mekhi Becton, the left tackle, who was Joe Douglas' first pick. I think you could see that kind of scenario. But I think it's not just 3 first rounders. It's getting a high pick, which is why the Jets and the Miami Dolphins have been heavily implicated here with the 2nd and 3rd pick respectively this year. But it depends on how the Texans feel about this quarterback class. They might not be sold on it with a new GM. So if that's the case, that changes things for them, because they're going to want a quarterback solution in some form in this process.
You know, I was thinking the Jets and Dolphins obviously make sense because of the available draft capital. I also wondered about Jacksonville and just the opportunity to get picks and Trevor Lawrence. Is that just an in-division thing that people think wouldn't happen?
Oh, you're talking about Jacksonville potentially trading for Deshaun Watson?
Yes.
Yeah, because he's widely considered the best quarterback prospect since Andrew Luck, maybe better. And you get 4 years of a rookie contract, or at least 3 years of a rookie contract. That's why I think the Jets, if they like Zach Wilson or Justin Fields, wouldn't make this move. You know, because it's really a big consideration when Deshaun Watson, in year 2 of trading for him, will be a $35 to $37 million cap hit each of those next 2 years. So that is a factor. You know, you can draft a guy that you can build around that costs you $3 million a year.
Sure, but that you're not sure totally if he's going to be a top 5 guy, but it makes sense too. All right, so the other 3 teams you mentioned as possible destinations after the Jets and Dolphins were the Panthers, who, by the way, I was a bit surprised that they're moving on and want to move on from Bridgewater after 1 year. I didn't think he was that terrible this year. Chicago, and then you mentioned the team here. And there's a quote in there from an NFC exec that I read earlier on the show. Quote, "I think they will be involved in the QB sweepstakes in a big way. They know they are close," closed quote. First of all, with respect to Watson, assess their chances. And then B, do you think they're going to be going after their quarterback answer in this offseason?
The second part of that question is key, because yes, I do. I think they're going to attack it pretty hard, or at least that's the expectation from some other teams I've talked to. That said, I don't know if it's going to be Watson or not. They might already say, hey, that's too much capital to give up for a team that's young and has a new coach in Ron Rivera trying to kind of instill a culture, and they saw they could win some games without elite quarterback play. And so, but I think they're going to look at everything. Sam Darnold, I wouldn't put that off the table. If you like him and his mobility and feel like he didn't get a fair shot in New York, you can try it with him for much less capital. And then there are going to be some other options out there, potentially Matthew Stafford. But I think Washington will be involved here in some form or another in the quarterback carousel for sure.
So we've talked here a lot about Stafford. The expectation, I think, is a first rounder. What do you think Stafford would make Washington next year?
A playoff team. I just think he's been in Detroit 12 years. It hasn't worked, but you talk to other coaches, it's not him. I mean, you know, he's in Detroit. It's just a tough place to win. Don't surround him with a lot. You know, he's considered a top 10 to 12 quarterback still. And when you have that, you put him on a good team with that defensive line and Terry McLaurin and Gibson and all those guys, like, you have some pieces that are intriguing. The line's pretty good. So that's a place they feel like they can win with a quarterback for sure.
What other teams are going to be interested in Stafford if Detroit even makes him available, which I don't know why they would, but let's just assume they want to start over and they want to draft somebody this year. What other teams would be a landing spot for Stafford?
The Colts. I mean, the spotlight's on the Colts, and originally they were being pointed to Carson Wentz, because of his history with Frank Reich, but it looks like the Eagles are going to try to hold on to him, or that's sort of been the situation with the Doug Peterson removal, that Wentz would be able to stay. And under his contract, that makes the most sense. So Stafford will be the play. I just think he makes more sense for an organization like the Colts that are ready-made. They've done everything. GM Chris Ballard has been patient in developing that roster, knowing that when it's time to get the quarterback, they would strike. And they did Phillip Rivers on a one-year deal for a reason. That's why I think Indy is the team people are watching.
Do you think if Rivers had stayed another year that Reich wanted him back?
You know, I think the plan was 1 year. I know he said multiple years was a possibility, but I really think everything went according to plan, and they knew it. They just sort of said the right things publicly about Rivers, you know, but it was a one-year experiment all the way. That's why Tom Brady got 2 years. They just sort of said the right things publicly about Rivers, you know, but it was a one-year experiment all the way. That's why Tom Brady got 2 years. So the money always speaks. There's a reason why Cam Newton was on a minimum contract this year, and you saw it, right? I mean, the results were minimum contract results. I just, in most cases, especially with quarterbacks, the money speaks in a big way.
Let me ask you about another guy that was on a minimum contract this year, Jameis Winston. Is he the starter in New Orleans next year under a new deal or not?
So I think there's a good possibility of that, to be honest. I think that they want him back. I think he knows that they want him back, but he also wants to see what his options are going to be, unless they come with a good offer. That one's complicated because the ability's there, and you talk to coaches in New Orleans, they say, man, like, his arm is terrific. He was slinging around in practice. A lot of people were surprised that Sean Payton played Taysom Hill instead of him for that four-game stretch, but I think they owed it to Hill to see what they had. That was always sort of the understanding when Hill signed his contract extension. But it's complicated because Hill has a $16 million cap hit this year, so can you give Winston a big deal when you're already going to be like $98 million over the cap right now? The Saints are in a world of hurt for a cap reckoning. So I don't know what they're going to do, but, you know, Jameis is an option, and the fact that he didn't play really at all this year probably helps them re-sign him from a financial standpoint.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. And that team with good quarterback play is ready to contend in a big way. That defense, I thought, was outstanding. Do you think, let's assume Breeze retires. What about Ben?
I don't think Ben's going to retire. I think he planned all along to play this last year of his contract. He's always been adamant about playing out his deals. And, you know, he's just wired a little differently where he's not going to just fade away. You know, I think he feels like he can still play. Maybe he will retire, but I'd be surprised. And I think the Steelers changed their offensive coordinator to give them some flexibility and to try to modernize the offense a little bit. But they promoted a guy in Matt Canada who worked with Ben for a year. So that makes them flexible in that way. You know, if Ben comes back, they can make some minor adjustments, but still keep some things he likes in the offense. But they can also kind of change some things where that no-huddle five wide receiver sets every down, was, you know, teams are starting to sit on that, and the Steelers couldn't always make them pay. So my guess is this one more year, and then you take the cap hit of $40 million, but then you get him off the books, and then he can retire, I believe, at age 39.
We're talking to Jeremy Fowler from ESPN, and I appreciate the time, Jeremy. This is interesting to me because I want to go back to Washington for a second, because you did say that you expect them to be active in trying to find their answer at quarterback. Let's say Stafford ends up in Indy. We haven't even talked about what Belichick's going to do at quarterback in New England. Will Matt Ryan be available?
My early reporting and informed speculation would be no. He's in the same situation as Carson Wentz and Ben Roethlisberger with the Eagles and Steelers, where those guys have a huge cap hit.
Yeah.
This year with huge dead money. So if you trade or get rid of them, you're taking on a lot of empty money, where next year, 2022, all three quarterbacks you can walk away from scot-free with no penalty and can gain cap space in most cases. So those are the outs, they call them. The potential out year is 2022 for all three of those guys. So, you know, first-year head coach in Arthur Smith, you know, Matt Ryan still put up some decent numbers. I think the Falcons would have looked at trading him 2 or 3 months ago. I think the way things are now, they can draft a guy at 4 if it's a quarterback. You still let him sit for a year and let Matt Ryan play one more. That's just my early guess. But look, he doesn't have a no-trade clause in his contract, and they can look around, and maybe if they find something, they can find a way to lessen the cap hit somehow.
You know, I just had Ross Tucker on, and he created a list of 17 teams that have legitimate quarterback questions in 2021. And it may be, you know, the biggest list in recent years. And you think Washington's going to be involved in a quarterback, you know, big move this year. It sounds to me like what's left after, you know, Stafford goes somewhere else, the Jets and or Dolphins would have the best opportunity at Watson. Ryan's cap hit is too expensive for Atlanta to move on. Same thing with Ben. That a guy like Darnold may be a target. Is there somebody else other than Darnold?
Ooh, let's see. I mean, you know, things aren't going so great in L.A. with Jared Goff. He's got a huge contract, but maybe they make him available. I don't want to float.
We don't want Goff.
You want Goff, you said?
No, we don't want Goff.
We don't want Goff. Well, that's the thing, right? Like, when you talk about top 15 quarterbacks with people around the league, Goff's name never comes up, ever.
Never.
Where at least Jimmy Garoppolo and Kirk Cousins do come up. So, but, you know, Jared Goff does, he throws the ball effortlessly. He really does throw a nice football. It's just, you know, he has some deficiencies in his game, and maybe the Rams, they seem unhappy a little bit right now with the way Sean McVay has commented publicly about Goff. They can't get out of that contract, but maybe they can trade him. I don't think so, but I think they'll give it one more year with him, but we'll see.
Yeah, and you mentioned Kirk. There's no way Minnesota's moving on from him after the year he had. I mean, they had a horrific defense. He had an exceptional year, and it's too expensive, I think, to move on from him, even though I think either Sean or Kyle would give up a lot to get him.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the way their offense is running now is that Gary Kubiak style. And, you know, the outside zone running, like, it fits him well with the play action. And
yeah,
it showed this year. And he's got one more year of big money, and then next year they could decide and they could walk away with more flexibility. So it's similar to Matt Ryan and those guys a little bit, you know. So that's why I think they'll give it one more year with Kirk. But they kind of have to start planning for the future, too, because they're sort of stuck in the middle with Cousins. You know, that's not a knock on him. But, you know, if you want to try to put it over the top, maybe you at least have to invest in a first-round draft pick at some point.
Back to Washington one last time. It is just a crowded quarterback need market. So they could be really aggressive and still come up with nothing, potentially. They do have the 19th pick where a guy like Trask or Mac Jones could be available. But it's... Yeah, it's going to be a fascinating next few months. Real quickly before I let you run, is Mahomes going to play or not?
Yeah, I think so. From everything I've gathered, I mean, he's working his way through the concussion protocol pretty successfully. So, you know, as long as his tests come back positive, then they can kind of give him more and eventually clear him for contact. So, yes, I do think he'll play.
Jeremy, thanks so much for the time. It's much appreciated. That was a really good story. You write a lot of good ones. I would urge everybody to go through the Deshaun Watson story that Jeremy wrote. He had a lot of really cool quotes, including the one I read from the NFC exec about Washington situation. I appreciate it, Jeremy.
Hey, thanks again. Appreciate you having me.
Jeremy Fowler, everybody, at JFowlerESPN on Twitter. Finish up the show when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, Team980.com.